Welcome to Moments with Marianne. This is your host, Marianne Pastana, and I am so excited to be celebrating 10 years of meaningful conversations with you. As we step into our new primetime hour, it's such an honor to share this exciting new chapter with you. So whether you're starting your day out, headed to work, or listening from wherever you are, this hour is designed to bring you thoughtful dialogue, fresh insight, and inspiring stories so you can make every moment count. So thank you for being here with me today, and let's dive in. We're here today with special guest, Hilda Koch, who's here to share with us her new book, Leadership, The Paradox of Surrender. So could surrender, self-awareness, and vulnerability be the missing key to stronger leadership? Well, today's guest is here to share with us just that. Hilda Koch brings a thoughtful and introspective approach to leadership, blending real-world experiences with research-backed insights. Her work focuses on self-awareness, values, and authentic leadership, helping readers move beyond surface-level strategies and lead with clarity, courage, and purpose. So welcome to the show, Hilda Koch.
Thank you so much, Marianne.
Oh my goodness, what an honor it is to talk with you about this book. What inspired you to explore the connection between leadership and surrender?
It's a very interesting topic. I went to a leadership conference, or I should say it was a camp. There was two suitcases, a formal suitcase, business attire, and then a backpack for camping. So we had the dichotomy of getting dressed up and getting dirty. So, and it was a bunch of leaders, and we call ourselves leaders, but I don't think I want to be a leader of a CEO of a company, but I think it was more for me about leadership of self. So there it began.
Well, I think that's a very important thing when we look at leadership, how we show up in the world. So how do you define point A, and why is it so central to authentic leadership?
During this leadership camp, one of our goals was a night hike, and we were given explicit instructions to get to point B in the quickest, efficient way possible with everyone in consensus. And it took us 6 hours to go less than a mile. And it was all about finding our point A, which everyone has a point A. And it goes back to, what are your values? Your values, people can say their values are family, but yet they're sitting at the table for dinner and they have their phone out. That's not family values. And so it really dials into your values. Is it business? Is it friendship? Is it love? Is it morality, integrity? And really finding out, is it that kind of person that you are?
Well, I know in your book, you talk about self-awareness. So what does that look like in practice for a leader?
It's self-awareness is constantly looking at yourself and redefining yourself, because we are changing, and which is a great thing, and it should be happening. Hey, this didn't work out for me. Let's look at it differently and how we can do this differently. We have this idea of scarcity. Well, this is the way that we've always done it. And we should be practicing from abundance, where it's limited. Our ideas, our potential don't have any boundaries. And being self-aware is checking your ego and making sure, hey, is this for the better of what my goals are, what my values are, or is it me just being selfish and not aware and letting that ego mask what should be going forward instead of being backward?
Well, I love how in your book, I mean, you start off chapter one talking about leadership requires two things, self-awareness and consensus. Why do you believe consensus is often misunderstood in leadership environments?
It's completely misunderstood. Consensus, an agreement with some, hey, let's go to dinner, and you agree to, hey, let's go for Mexican food, and that's having an agreement. But if there's more than one person, everyone can say, hey, let's go to Mexican, but you really wanted Thai food, and you're not happy. And translate that to a business meeting, and you have a goal, and hey, we're going to do it this way. Yes, yes, and everyone agrees, but there's people that aren't the loudest in the room and may not state their opinion. And maybe they have a better idea, but they feel small. They feel maybe belittled. They don't want to speak up, or maybe their idea doesn't feel right. And so it's gaining the trust of your team to let them know that it's a safe space. There's an understanding that there's a goal, and working together towards that goal for the good of the company, and you're, again, aligning with your values.
Well, that's such an important thing. And I love how you just give the framework for that within your book. How can leaders recognize the difference between agreement and true consensus?
I'm going to go back to finding our point B from point A. For the first 2 hours, we just sat there with our packs on. After about an hour, I took my pack off, and I'm like, what am I doing carrying all this stuff around? It's just weighting me down. I'm like, and that's like another quality in life. You know, we have all these things that we carry around thinking they're important, and they're really not. At least at that point in time, it wasn't. And it's understanding that. And we had a facilitator. So there was 10 of us in this group finding our point B. And the facilitator made sure that we were all in consensus. Mind you, we're in the dark now and we're hungry. So we were very motivated to move forward. And we didn't see people's faces, but the facilitator did. It could have been an eye roll. It could have been a shrug. It could have been a dismissive sound. And the facilitator stopped us. And everyone in the group was like, what the hell is going on? And we didn't understand. We were made painfully aware of what consensus was. There was a story that was told. It's kind of like it was a husband and wife, and then the mom was sick, and it's like, hey, we're gonna go to dinner with mom. And the husband's like, I don't want to go to dinner with mom. And he's like, oh, okay, honey. And then when it came time to come around to have dinner with mom, he's like, oh, you were serious. I wasn't serious. And he's like, he agreed, but he wasn't in consensus. So we say yes to things when we really mean no, and we're too afraid to voice that opinion. I think when true consensus takes time, and in this day and time, we don't have the time, or at least leaders don't think they have the time. But what it boils down to is building that trust. And you can have a superficial relationship and say, oh, hi, Bob. Hey, Jane, how are you guys doing today? And it's very superficial, but it's like, hey, how was your weekend? How was this? How was, you know, understanding them and as a person, and what I want to say makes them ticks, but have a vested interest in them. And then it's building that trust when things go bad, and the team needs to move forward, and they need a leader that they can trust and understands them. So it's time well spent to have that understanding, so there can be consensus.
Sounds like this was such an important and impactful practice. What made you decide to go ahead and do it?
I'm in the medical field, and Our goal is, you know, to take care of the patient. We took an oath to do no harm. And, you know, as a whole, the medical team should work together. And there's varying ideas of how to take care of that patient. And for some reasons or times, there's other, I guess, political issues or other agendas, and that don't always align with patient care. And that I was involved in an incident like that. And so that really hit home. And we weren't in consensus with the treatment of this patient. And that affected me. And I said, we need to do things differently. So it's going back to leadership of self and doing the right thing and trusting myself and being impactful to others.
Oh my goodness. Well, thank you for sharing that. I think most people go through their day when we're talking about leadership of ourselves, where we encounter things that are contrary to our beliefs or our values. And how we can manage and deal with that is such a big deal.
Absolutely.
So what role does vulnerability play in effective leadership?
Vulnerability, people see it as a fault. I don't see it as a fault. You think of the word courage, and people see that as being very brave and, you know, very strong. But in order for you to have courage, you need to be vulnerable, because you don't know what's ahead. You don't know what's behind that door. You don't know the outcome, but it's still moving forward and, in a sense, braving that and having the courage to go through that, the unknown. And that's what leaders need to do. So it does take to be soft. I'm going to use that word, soft. And leaders don't see themselves as being soft. And another word I like to use is failure, where people think that's a bad thing. And they say failure is not an option. Well, it absolutely is an option, because people learn more from their mistakes, I believe, than they do their successes. So it's a learned thing to be softer, I guess.
Well, I love that. I think some of my greatest lessons have also come from some of my biggest mistakes, or what I would consider a mistake, and look back and go, okay, well, I learned a lot through that process. So being able to look at it with that lens is so impactful.
Yes. Yes.
Why do so many leaders struggle with radical honesty about themselves?
Yeah. Interesting. And all of us have triggers, and these triggers come from our past. We can be completely happy and okay, and someone says something, and we go from 0 to 100 in less than 0.3 seconds. Why is that? You know, and it goes back to our childhood and what has happened to us. We were taught certain things like, don't do that. That's completely wrong. And then you were made, you felt embarrassed. You're like, okay, I'm never going to do that again. Whatever that is, you know, and we don't want to be embarrassed. We have shame. We were blamed for something. So these triggers are very real, and they're obviously not in the foreground, but in the background of how we experience life. And I had my brother, who has since passed, but he does certain things and that would trigger me. And I have a friend, and I'm wondering, he's doing something nice, but I find that he sets off my triggers for that relate back to my brother. And I'm like, he's just doing something nice. Why am I getting so mad? And it's going back to those triggers and what set people off, and what sets them off. And that goes back to leadership. If someone triggers that leader in a certain way, they're going to react the way they've always reacted, which is not necessarily the right way. Well, this is the way we've always done it, you know? And they revert back to old habits, which aren't always the best.
I really dislike when people say that, you know, because that to me, that tells me that they're just stuck in old programming, old patterns. And you know, it's like, okay, well, we've always done it this way. Doesn't mean it's the most effective or the most, you know, the best way to do it.
Yes. This is the way we've always done it. And then that goes back to scarcity and not practicing abundance. And again, I'm going to call it another soft kind of trait, which leaders don't like, because this is my way or the highway. You know, you're going to do it my way. And, you know, when that's not allowed to have people grow or flourish, and they might have ideas, but they're too scared to present those ideas. And that talent's going to go somewhere else because they weren't allowed to express, you know, their potential. And we grow together, we grow apart. And so them not allowing to express their potential is wasted. And that's what we need to be able to grow and, you know, experience different things and at least try different things. And if it doesn't work, then we know and just keep moving forward.
Oh, I appreciate you expanding on that and sharing that for our listeners. And one of the things I found so interesting in your book, you talk about game faces. So how can someone begin to identify their game face that they rely on the most?
Yes, very interesting. Sometimes I play this role. I'm in the room because I've been screamed at. And so I don't want to give my opinion, or I'm the tough talker. Nope, this is this is how we're going to do it. You know, nope, this is my experience. And but how do you identify that? And it you have to take a step back and be willing to be vulnerable. And again, going back to leadership of self. And if you're having problems with relationships and communication, it's what kind of person are you? What game face do you put on, and how do you show up, and how that does it affect, again, not just your work life, but your personal life? If you find that you're always having a certain argument or communication issues with certain people, you know, go back to seeing how you're presenting yourself. And in the book, it goes through the different faces. And I think we can all identify with people that, you know, like perfectionism. Well, I don't want to do anything because I'm not sure if it's right. You know, and I use the analogy of sailing a boat. You know, the wind's going to change directions. Do you not go anywhere because you said you set yourselves in sails in this direction? Or do you change your sail and just keep moving forward? And so that's, you know, a perfect example of people that have so much potential, but are so paralyzed with fear to move forward. And if they were just to look at their life and reset or realign how their values and what their goals are, and I think they can do wonderful things. And, you know, I want to empower people to do the best that they can. So I'm hoping that those seven game faces, you know, they pick out a few and, you know, look at them carefully and work on exercises to understanding. And understanding is the key. And then once you understand and be able to change those in your daily life. So.
Oh, that's so important. Thank you for sharing that with us. It's just interesting. I love that analogy that you used, because it's so true, because outside forces are always going to change. So staying static, how does that affect? It's probably going to negatively affect what we do going forward.
Absolutely. And I'm not the perfectionist, so I make mistakes all the time. So I just kind of laugh and go, all right. But, you know, I see people and I just see them as being so amazing. And I'm like, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? And then they do nothing. And it's sad, you know, to see that with potential. And you know, I want to empower people and motivate people. And so I'm going to digress for a second. one of our other things that we did on this camp was had a vision quest. And so we were with our backpacks. We had to camp for 48 hours solo camping where we couldn't leave our 18 by 18 square foot thing. We were given water, toilet paper, and granola mix. And we weren't allowed to leave or talk to anybody. We had no cell phones, no watches. And we, the goal or the idea behind it was to do a vision quest where you wrote down 2 pages of what were you going to do in a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. And I kind of missed the mark on it. I'm like, what am I doing here? I'm like, I'm going to write a book about this. And so I just started thinking of all the analogies and I made myself a promise. I said, I'm not just going to talk about writing a book. I'm actually going to write a book. And that's what I came out from my vision quest.
Well, I'm so glad that you did. I mean, you have such great research in this book and great advice. And one of the things that I wanted to touch on is, I mean, I know leaders, they get to a point where they feel so disconnected from their values. How do they start to rebuild that connection?
That's a great question. I think it happens all the time. I think there's outside influences, whether it's corporate, the corporate structure, and they begin to lose themselves and who they are and what they stand for. And that's not a good place to lead from, where their values have been diluted. And they've become a person that they don't want to be. That's, again, not a good place. And, you know, it's having those hard conversations with yourself and you know, checking yourself and realizing maybe this corporate environment or this particular company no longer aligns with my values. And I think that's a tough pill to swallow. But, you know, if you've become a person that you're not happy with, you can't look at yourself in the mirror, put your head on your pillow, that's on you. And I think now there's a lot of corporations that, you know, are misaligned with their values. And it comes back to, you know, your morality and your integrity. And if those are affected, then, you know, you have to live with that. And that's not a good place. If you, you know, I call them your non-negotiables. If you believe in, you know, telling the truth and you're having to lie, that's a non-negotiable, and that's needs to be looked at. And maybe it's not a good fit for the company and that leader or that person.
It's those tough decisions that when we bravely address them, I know I've done that a few times in my life where I've been met with very difficult circumstances and realizing that something doesn't align with my values, that's a hard thing to look at, but it really ends up making you more fulfilled when you're able to say, okay, these are, like, as you're saying, my non-negotiables. I'm not going to do X, Y, Z. And we end up being happier making choices, even though it seems like, I know a lot of people feel like they're trapped in their job or their work situation, but being able to make that kind of, you know, that stand in the world for themselves really is so impactful. And that's one of the things that I really took away from your book.
Completely. And thank you. Absolutely. It's taking a stand, and it's taking a stand for yourself. Again, going back to being a leader of yourself and you're having your non-negotiables. And you'd be surprised how many people don't know what their non-negotiables are. And they wonder why they don't feel good, you know, because they've been, I don't want to use the word exploited, but they've been used or meant to feel used. And it's taking a stand for yourself and being a leader of yourself and knowing knowing your values and the importance of yourself and your non-negotiables. And like you said, it's being able to make those tough decisions and saying, you know, maybe this is not a good fit and move forward. And like you said, be happier, take the pay cut, you know, live a happier life. And, you know, it's life is precious and it's about experiences and events. And if you're not happy, then it wasn't worth it. Money can't buy those experiences of happiness and joy.
Well, Hilda, I thought your book, Leadership, The Paradox of Surrender, was such an impactful read. Thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show with us here today.
Thank you, Marianne. It was wonderful, and I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you, Hilda. It's been such an honor to spend this time with you and to talk about your new book, Leadership, The Paradox of Surrender. Make sure to visit Hilda's website at hildacoch.com. That's spelled K-O-C-H.com. Be part of her community and learn more about her work. Well, we're at the end of our time today. I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in. You're listening to Moments with Marianne, where we make every moment count.
In a single moment, your life can change. Moments with Marianne is a transformative hour that covers an endless array of topics with the best of the best. Her guests are leaders in their fields, ranging from inspirational authors, top industry leaders, and business and spiritual entrepreneurs. Each guest is gifted and a true visionary, a recognized leader in her own work, and while teaching others to develop, refocus, and grow, Marianne will bring the best guest and sometimes a special surprise. Don't miss this. You never know just which moment will change your life forever. Make sure to tune in and visit momentswithmarianne.com for more information.